The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. And I'm furious at the story Ursula just had in her newscast, at what our public officials are doing to our region, the public safety threat, particularly for young women right now. The correlation is very clear that our policies are putting young women at grave risk around here. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Last year, and certainly throughout this year, we've gotten to know Kelly Herron pretty well. Kelly's a very cool young woman. She was training for a marathon, going for a run in the middle of the afternoon. She was down by Golden Gardens when she popped into the bathhouse restroom there. And that's when a man followed her into the bathroom and brutally attacked her in an attempted sexual assault. Kelly, so strong, so feisty, screaming at the top of her lungs, kicking, hitting, scratching, doing everything you have to do when you're fighting off an animal like that. And she was able to get away from this guy, to lock him in the bathroom with the help of some other passersby. And they were able to catch the man, who died in prison just a couple of months ago. But that guy had moved up here from another state, from Arizona. Earlier this year, there was a brutal rape of a woman in the bathroom of a Ballard car dealership at 7:30 in the morning. The attacker in that case was a man who had moved up here from Texas. And what happened at the Westin Hotel in downtown Seattle, a nice hotel, lots of people there. You would think that a woman traveling to Seattle on business would be safe. But this woman, she got on the elevator with a bunch of other people, and everyone else got off the elevator except for her and a 20-year-old man. And when she got off on the 14th floor, so did the 20-year-old man. And thank God she had some instincts to not open her hotel room door. She did not go into her room, and so the man tried to sexually assault her in the hallway of the 14th floor of the Westin. She screamed at the top of her lungs. She fought, but the man, you know, was able to pull her pants zipper down. But as she was screaming, a guy in another room called hotel security, and then he came out, screamed at the man to get off her, and the woman was able to get safely into her hotel room, and they were able to catch the 20-year-old man who was attacking her. Patrick Brooks is the man's name. Let me tell you a little bit about Patrick Brooks. Big guy. Just 20 years old, but 6'4", about 210 pounds. He just came to our region. Despite the fact that he has no ties to the Puget Sound area, no job, no known address. Just another drifter from around the country who has found this to be the most welcoming, inclusive place in the United States for drifter would-be rapists. And the reason for that is because of our public policies. Because we have legalized possession amounts of all drugs, including heroin and meth. We have legalized them in King and Snohomish County, where the prosecutors have said they will not prosecute personal possession amounts of any drug. We are providing a place where you can shoot up heroin in your own government-run death site. And the Supreme Court got us a step closer to that today because of their radical liberalism. We have become the magnet destination in the United States for drifters and addicts and vagrants. And our women are not safe. They are getting attacked by these people. And how our politicians, how Jenny Durkin and Dow Constantine and Jay Inslee can look themselves in the mirror when they know that their policies have created this jungle-like atmosphere. You cannot ignore the common thread that some of these brutal sexual assaults of women are being committed by men who have moved here from other states. It's something our politicians don't like to talk about, because the reason they have created this drug homelessness culture, this crime culture, is so that they can raise our taxes, expand government, solve the problem that they have created. In Lindsay Sheldon's story on Cairo 7, I'm going to talk to Lindsay, the reporter for Cairo 7 on this. I'll talk to her at 12:30. But they talked to hotel guests. They talked to people who said, we're going to have to. We're going to have to start cleaning things up around here. Here's a man that they talked with.
We were just in San Francisco. It's kind of the same thing everywhere.
Not everywhere. But in the most liberal cities that have encouraged as much drug use as possible, as much vagrancy as possible, that's where it's happening.
I'd probably just scream, and hopefully that someone in the room did what that other guy did.
That was another hotel guest. A few months ago, Cairo 7 asked the senior vice president of public affairs about all of these concerns.
We're concerned that if the problems were to become worse, more prolific, that could affect their business. The conventions could either cancel or threaten to not come back again.
Yeah, that's the group that tries to bring conventions to Seattle. But why would any national group want to bring their convention to Seattle or the Puget Sound area when we've turned the streets over to animals? And when we've legalized drug use, when we have the most aggressive panhandlers who are threatening people on an hourly basis in downtown Seattle. And then you have the common thread of drifter drug vagrants who are attacking women in a place where they should be safe. This is a direct result of our local government policies. And we have women getting attacked. And yeah, I know that everybody cares deeply about this, but as the father of three young women in their 20s, as the husband of a woman that I care about so deeply, when I understand the risk that my wife, my daughters, the people you love in your life, and you yourself, when I understand the risk that we are all facing because of our policies, because of the drug culture, because we want to be the heroin capital of the country, it is shameful, the people that we have running things around here. And our women are getting attacked because of it. Seattle City Council, every single member of that miserable, godforsaken council is creating these problems. We'll talk more about this with Cairo 7 reporter Lindsay Sheldon coming up right at the bottom of the hour. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Well, I talked a couple of days ago to a dad up in Marysville whose son took his life back in October. The dad is Jason Goddard. And the reason he reached out to me was he said he just felt lost because he was trying to get answers from the school. Because other kids who loved his son came to him a few weeks after the suicide and said that his son was being bullied. And they said it was a couple members of the football team doing the bullying. And the dad said, look, I don't want a lawsuit. All I want is answers. I want to know what happened. Because he said his son was a happy-go-lucky kid. And he had no idea that he was hurting this much inside. And he said the school told him that they would talk to other kids who were getting bullied. They would talk to the alleged bullies. That they would try to get some answers. And as of our conversation on Tuesday, it'd been 2 months and the dad hadn't heard anything. And when I talked to the dad earlier this week, he told me that his son really downplayed the bullying.
He was told to stay away from my son, and my son didn't want him to get in trouble. Went to the principal and said, I don't want this guy to get in trouble. It was a stupid thing to say, and I accept his apology, basically. Well, then he's later that week claiming that football players are harassing him. I'd said some things to him, but it didn't. He made it seem like it was no big deal.
Okay, no big deal, but that's what he had heard from his son's friends, he said, is that football players there were harassing him. Friends told his dad how upset his son had been.
The Friday before Thanksgiving, a few of his classmates who really liked him, loved him, came to our house and said that he was, at one point in that week, crying to one of them about how he was tired of the football team bullying him and how he, quote, didn't even want to be here anymore.
Okay, so that's what the dad had heard from other kids at the school. And he said, look, I just want these other kids to get help, including the kids who were allegedly doing the bullying.
All the people that really loved my son and really miss him, they feel like they want to tell somebody and nobody's asked them. And the people who did the bullying should be talking to somebody. It's not their fault. It was my son's decision. But they have to be feeling guilt. They should be getting some help.
So that's what he wanted for the bullies. He just wants them to get help if they're carrying around the guilt of what happened. So that was my conversation with the dad. I'm very happy to report that after he came on my show earlier this week, the district reached out to him. He talked to Nicole yesterday and said that he met with the superintendent. The superintendent heard that he had been on my show, had no ill will at all, that the dad spoke out with us. And the superintendent assured the dad that they would talk to everybody they needed to on both sides of this issue, the, you know, alleged bullies, the supposed victims of the bullying. And it sounds very encouraging that the district now says that they will get to work on it. So that was the dad's reason for coming on with me. And it sounds like things are moving in the right direction. At least that's what he told us when we talked to him off air yesterday. I will tell you, I got an email from a football team parent up there who the dad, he repeated what he had heard from the son's friends. And he said, yeah, some members of the football team were bullying. And that's what he repeated on the show. So we get an email from a football team parent who writes, you have a large group of parents coming together who are very upset regarding your accusation of the whole football team bullying this boy at Marysville Pilchuck so badly he chose to kill himself. That's a pretty large accusation to make, not to mention the slander of a whole group of kids. First of all, the dad never said it was the whole football team. He said it was some football players. But the mom goes on to write, there may have been the one kid mentioned in the story who threatened him and happened to be on the football team, but that sure as hell is not the same as accusing the team as a whole. Extremely dangerous statements you made. You just might want to look into the actual facts and check out both sides of a story before printing. This group of parents will be taking this to the next level unless working is change in the article. I don't know what that last sentence was supposed to read like. Unless we change the article. So, so their way to refute that bullying was going on with the members of the football team was to bully us. Sounds like they were threatening a lawsuit against us because I talked to a dad who is going through the greatest grief a human being can possibly go through, having lost a kid. And this mom claims that several parents, by taking this to the next level, sounds to me like she was threatening legal action for things that were never said. The dad never accused the whole football team. But let me just give some public advice to this mom and to everybody else. If somebody accuses your kid of being a bully or being part of an organization that has some bullying within it, probably the best response is not to try to bully the messenger and to threaten us with, I don't know, legal action. If we don't change an article that was based on nothing but what the dad told us and that led to, you know, some positive action as he is communicating with the superintendent. But don't threaten us. Don't threaten me. Don't threaten my show. Don't try to bully us. And ask yourself, if you're saying that no bullying exists within the organization, and yet your response to a parent who's going through the worst grief imaginable is to fire off threats, you might want to be a little introspective about that. Because the dad was just passing along what he had heard, and it's led to some positive things in communication with the district. So if your large group of parents, give it a shot. See where you get with that. Speaking of which, one of the things that's, speaking of bullying, you hear about this dad whose daughter was kicked off the school bus for bullying? This is in Ohio. And so he recorded video of him driving very slowly behind his daughter as she was walking to school.
Good morning and happy Monday, everyone. Well, it's a happy Monday for some of us. A little background into this video that's being shot this morning. This lovely lady is my 10-year-old daughter who has, for the second time this school year, been kicked off the school bus due to bullying another student. Let me make this extremely clear. Bullying is unacceptable, especially in my household. Friday, when my daughter brought home her paperwork for her bus suspension, she said, "Daddy, you're going to have to take me to school next week." As you see this morning, she is learning otherwise. A lot of children today feel that the things their parents do for them is a right and not a privilege, such as parents taking their children to school in the morning, or even bus rides to school in the morning. All of that is a privilege and should be treated as such. So today, my beautiful daughter is going to walk 5 miles to school in 36-degree weather. I know a lot of you parents are not going to agree with this, but that is all right, because I'm doing what I feel is right to teach my daughter a lesson and to stop her from bullying. So children, if you're watching this, please understand that bullying is unacceptable everywhere and will not be tolerated. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
I love that. So dad hears his daughter's bullying, and he decides to punish his daughter and hold her accountable. For the Marysville football mom who heard that members of her kid's team might have been involved in bullying, and the response is to go after the messenger, those are 180-degree different ways of handling something like this. I love what the dad in Ohio did. That is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to talk with Cairo 7's Lindsay Sheldon about this brutal attack at the Westin Hotel downtown from another out-of-stater, another vagrant coming to our region. That's next. We have talked so often about the crime that is plaguing this area, and You know, as a dad of three girls in their 20s, when I hear stories like the one that Cairo 7 reported last night, it's just particularly frightening to hear when something like this happens in downtown Seattle, in a place where somebody should feel safe. Lindsay Sheldon is the reporter who covered the story for Cairo 7 of a brutal attack at the Westin Hotel last Thursday. And Lindsay joins us here on Cairo Radio. Lindsay, always good to talk to you.
Hi, Dory. Thanks for talking with us about the story.
Yeah, so in case people didn't hear my big lead just a few minutes ago, just kind of recap what went down at the Westin last Thursday.
Well, a woman who was staying there on business was coming back to the hotel between, you know, around 9 o'clock evening, not very, very late, and walked into the hotel, went into the elevator with other people in the elevator with her, and a man walked on in the group, and as she went up to the 14th floor, different people got off on their floors, and she was left in the elevator with this man, a big man. He was about 6'4", 200 pounds. And he followed her off the elevator, and she walked to her room, and she kind of sensed something was off. So, thankfully, she didn't go into her room. But she paused, and then as she turned and looked at the suspect, he just attacked her in the hotel hallway and just started choking her, his arms around her neck. He pulled her pants zipper down. Just this awful sexual attack in the middle of the Westin hallway on the 14th floor.
And did people in other rooms hear her screams?
Eventually, yes, thankfully. She was screaming and struggling and fighting this guy. And thankfully, a hotel guest down the hallway finally heard her screams, notified hotel security, and then came out himself and basically said to that suspect, you better get off of her. And, you know, fortunately, he did, but this guy didn't even know, this guest didn't even know if this man had a weapon.
Sure.
You know?
Well, that's always there's so many things that are at play, just as you described that, Lindsay. Number one, the woman's instincts obviously were right on, but I also know that a lot of people don't want to act on those instincts because they're afraid that they're going to, you know, be portrayed as you know, just being paranoid and not wanting to make the guy feel bad if he's truly innocent and all of that. But so I'm so glad that she acted on her instincts. And then for the neighboring hotel guests, you are staying at a nice place. You don't want to get in the midst of some hellish nightmare. And you, like you just said, you have no idea if the guy's got a knife or a gun. And so people have to, they've got to be pretty bold to intervene in something like that.
Right. You know, and it's a scary thing because once you get into your hotel where you're staying for the night, maybe you've been staying there for several days, you kind of let your guard down, right? It's a public place in that people can come and go, right? It's right in downtown Seattle. But she probably thought, okay, all these people are guests,
yeah,
and this is fine. You know, I'm not going to worry about this other person who's going up to my floor as well.
Yeah. It's just awful to think about this. So tell me what we know about the guy.
What we know about the man is that he moved to Washington State from Virginia about a month ago. And according to these charging docs, he has no community ties. He has no job and he has no known address. So basically some kind of floater who told police, I did this because a Facebook bot told me I could do anything with no consequences. And I did this to the woman to make her feel alive.
Jeez. Oh, my. Yeah, it's just absolute insanity. So 20 years old, no ties to this area, and he came here. Did he say what brought him out to our region?
Didn't see it in the charging docs. He's set for arraignment on December 17th. So we'll be going to that and seeing if anything else is revealed about it, what brought him here, what he was doing in the month since he's been here. But that's what we know about him right now.
Well, and, you know, the common thread in so many of these attacks on women, Lindsay, and, you know, like I said at the beginning, I think all of us care deeply about this, but as the father of three daughters in their 20s, I think I'm particularly attuned and to things like this. Kelly Herron, who was, you know, sexually assaulted at Golden Gardens, that was a drifter who came here from another state. The woman who was brutally raped in the car dealership bathroom in Ballard, that was a man who came here from out of state. This is a guy who came here a month ago from out of state. And so many of these brutal attacks on women seem to be people who have come to our region from other parts of the country. And it's impossible to ignore the common thread between so many of these high profile attacks.
It's chilling. It's awful. I know, Kelly. I've talked to her about that case.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily in her case, she was really able to fight back more. But, you know, it's causing people to kind of have to be even more alert, even more cautious, you know, to have your wits about you because you don't know what to expect in places where you do expect a certain level of safety.
Yeah. And our public officials who have tried to tell us for years that so many of the drug-addicted drifters, the vagrants on our streets, are our neighbors and are people who grew up here. And yet, in so many of these high-profile crimes, that just absolutely is not the case. And we have a real problem because we are attracting some of the worst of society from around the country, and they're coming here for, you know, pretty obvious reasons. We've, you know, de facto legalized drugs in King and Snohomish County, and it's becoming a real problem that's manifesting itself in the worst of ways. And I know, Lindsay, you've talked to the convention people here in Seattle who are also very concerned because of the rep that our city is getting for these organizations that are thinking about bringing tens of thousands of people to Seattle for one of their big annual conventions.
Right. Yeah. You know, we reached out to them in the summer when the American Pharmacists Association basically, you know, told them we're concerned because our convention planners came out here and we saw, you know, open drug use. We had people who were being aggressively bothered by people demanding cash, not, you know, asking for it in a way that is polite and that is not, you know, threatening. And they ran into a lot of things, you know, people defecating and urinating openly that really concerned them about bringing thousands of people in a convention to Seattle. And of course, we want to make the distinction that, you know, when we're talking about criminals who attack people, that's not all our homeless population. We know that.
Sure.
But there are criminals within that. That's a small part, but that's a part that has to be addressed. The same thing with the mental health issues, right? Same thing with the drug issues within that. And so, you know, those convention planners were really concerned, and they talked to Visit Seattle, and Visit Seattle made it known to the mayor's office.
I know. It's becoming a real issue for our once beautiful city, the rep we're getting. How is the woman, the victim in this Weston attack? Do you know?
All we know is her initials, AL. They did not mention anything beyond the fact that as soon as that hotel guest intervened, she immediately went into her room, obviously, to get away from this and to feel some level of safety. So, you know, we hope that she's doing okay, you know, for her protection. Obviously, they're not identifying her.
Right.
But it sounds like, you know, she was able to escape before things got even worse because she told police if that man had not intervened, she would have been raped or even killed, she believed.
Very important that you're covering stories like this, Lindsay. I always appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for coming on with me today.
Thanks for talking with us, Dory.
Lindsay Sheldon, Cairo 7 News. You can see that story up on their website at CairoTV.com. Love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. And we do have lots more straight ahead here on The Dory Monson Show. Well, as we told you in the big lead, our region has a problem with attracting the worst drug vagrants in the country here, and a lot of them are committing really horrible, brutal crimes. The other thing that we are just absolutely manic about is Jay Inslee wants our state to be the illegals' destination. And we have the fifth highest number of illegals of any state in the country. And that's because Washington has actively tried to bring as many illegals as possible here through our sanctuary policies and everything else. Incredible benefits and does illegal stream into our country. One of the things that is not talked about a lot is the fact that most illegals in the United States are on welfare. A new report came out this week that most people who are in the United States illegally are getting welfare benefits. This is based on the latest Census Bureau data. 63% of non-citizen households are on welfare. 63%. So the cost of this, just financially, is tremendous. And then there are the crimes that are committed. A 24-year-old illegal back in New York who had previously been deported from this country but sneaks back in because we have no borders at all. This guy followed a 36-year-old mother of two to her home on Long Island. And once he fought his way into her house, he knocked her unconscious and then repeatedly raped her for an hour, according to police documents. And this happened in Nassau County, which is sanctuary. They refused to turn criminal illegals over to ICE. And one of the investigators said this was one of the most brutal sexual assaults she had ever investigated. According to the police report, he followed her home, knocked her out, raped her for an hour. When she woke up from the attack, he knocked her out again and allegedly continued raping her. This guy has previous convictions, but the sanctuary laws there protected him from being turned over for deportation. He'd been working for a landscaping business there. He came into the United States in 2010, was deported in 2014, and swiftly re-entered the country. Let's build that wall. How about we get the wall built and keep guys like that out? And man, don't give me the title, are you saying U.S. citizens never commit rape? No, I'm saying this woman would not have been raped for an hour and knocked unconscious if this illegal was not in the country. And what I hear all the time from the left is we should spend billions of dollars on things if it helps just one child. Yeah, that's their argument on gun control. If it can save just one life, well, if that's your standard, let's build the wall. Because the countries that have allowed unfettered illegal streaming into their nation, you know, Scandinavian countries, there are entire sections of cities that have been taken over by the refugees. And in Finland today, just a horrible story. Seven migrant illegals there have been arrested in what they called the shocking grooming case as they repeatedly raped a 10-year-old girl. This happened in northern Finland. The men, 20 to 40 years old, all came as migrant refugees in recent years. And Finland is one of the many Scandinavian countries that, through their policies, through their willful negligence of not enforcing any kind of border control at all, they're seeing huge swaths of their country. But the standard I always hear for the gun control, if it will save just one life. Well, let's see if there's any consistency on the left. Let's see if there's any consistency from President Trump, too. You know, who talked incessantly about building the wall and has done very little to get that done. So he needs to follow through on one of the things that got him elected. Let's get that wall built. Start saving. If you'll save just one life. Okay, we're going to check the news for you, and then the Fastest 15 is coming up next.